Mammoth
Audio. This is Scammapalooza. My name is Nicholas J. Johnson. For more information on today's show, check out conman.com.au. When I was 6 years old, I lost $5 in a rigged balloon popping game at the Royal Canberra Show. If it hadn't been for the intervention of a local cop, I would not have walked away the proud owner of a glow-in-the-dark plastic skeleton. Glenn Hester is also a cop, a man who spent 28 years shutting down crooked carnival operators, and he joins me on the show today. Every child wins a prize. This is Scammapalooza. I have your book here, Carnival Cop. It is a fantastic read. I love Todd Robbins' introduction to you at the start. Very different, because most books about scams and cons, basically. So this guy's not to be trusted, and he's a scoundrel and a rascal, and he's always looking for grey areas, whereas he says he's not one of those turn-the-other-cheek kinds of fellows. Nope, if you're doing wrong, he'll come after you, and your life will not be a pleasant thing. I love that. I think that's a brilliant way to introduce you. Do you think that's true? Do you think you're a hard guy and, you know, you're a tough customer when it comes to carnival scams?
Well, I look at it this way. You know, I try to work with the carnies, you know, when I was out on the midway with them. We had to deal with other people as well. We had to deal with the sponsoring organization, you know, who brought them in, and there were politics involved with that. We had to deal with the owner of the carnival, you know, that brought the people in. Most of the people that had the games, you know, some of the games I would modify, if I could, to make it fair to both the player and the game agent. You know, some people didn't like that, you know, but I told them it's the only way they're going to open the game up. We had, for instance, the peach basket game. You know, I had the guy come out and do this from the point of the player, and he couldn't do it unless there was a ball in the basket or he did a cross throw, you know, and the ball in the basket, as you know, will deaden the basket so the ball won't bounce out. And if he does a cross throw, that's, you know, or he hits the rim, he can get it in. But unfortunately, those were all things on his rules saying that he could not do that, you know, and, I told him, I said, the only way that I'll allow it in is that you will allow rim shots and not argue about it if they get a rim shot and get the ball in. You know, several of them over the years agreed to it, and that was good. Other games that they had, like the throw the ring over the Coke bottle, you know, that was basically more gambling than anything else. And we had one guy that owned the thing, and I had him come out to the point of the player. He threw one at a time, and then he threw a bunch of them and never got it on any of the bottles. And I asked him, I said, well, which bottle are you throwing at? He said, that doesn't matter. I said, yes, it does. If you're not specifying a bottle, then you've got to game a chance. And that's gambling here in the state of Georgia. So, you know, we closed that down. And various other games we modified to make it good, like the balloon game. They wanted these underinflated balloons on top. I asked the guy, I said, what's with the underinflated balloons on the top? He says, those are $5. I said, really? I said, how many tries? Oh, two or three tries, and, you know, they can get it. I said, come on out to the point of the player. They do. And they couldn't bust them with about 10 darts. So I said, look, I said, we're getting in a lot of money right here. I said, I could use my .45 Glock and shoot one of those balloons, and I'm sure the bullet would ricochet off and not pop it. You know, that's the way it is. He says, well, I can't keep them up. I said, if you do, it's you'll get three hot in a cot, which means that, you know, you get three square meals a day and a nice bed at our county jail. I said, get them down, inflate the balloons fully, and I said, make sure that the darts do not have any split shot in them to make the person over or undercompensate. I said, make sure they got sharp points and they have the fletching, you know, the little fins.
I mean, it sounds like to me that you have two responsibilities. One is to make sure that the game is fair, and the other is to make sure that it's not gambling. Or was your job?
Yeah, you want to make sure that all the games are skill games, and, you know, and what that means is that depending on the player and their level of skill, is it winnable? You know, can it be won? And there are some very good skill games out there. And I'll give you an example. One I cannot even do. It's a hand-eye coordinating game. Are you familiar with the spiral wire that circles around and you have to take the ring and while it's spiraling and go from the top to the very bottom and without touching the wire?
Oh, yeah, and it will, the light goes off.
Now, that's a great eye-hand coordinating game. And unfortunately, I'm not skilled in it. You know, it would take me a long time to learn that, you know, to be able to do it. So, but other people can. And we had some people with the Vice Squad that were able to do certain things, you know, the certain games that I couldn't. And, you know, some games I did allow in, not only because of politics, but because, you know, people enjoyed them. You're familiar with the machine gun game, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, where you shoot out the star?
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, you know, when you've got a small star there, depending on the size of the star, you know, you're supposed to shoot around the star and cut it out. But the 177 caliber BB that should be fired at it is not in the gun. It's more like split shot, which has, which you use for weighing down your fishing line. And that's basically what it is. And the targets that the people have are not like our police targets. If you shoot a police target, you've got a hole right through it. It doesn't tear. It just punches a hole right through it. And the targets for the machine gun game, they're fibrous. So they tear, and that means that they can push the red back up and show that you've lost. And the odds of winning, you know, are astronomical. I let it stay simply because people like to shoot the gun.
Yeah.
And the sponsoring organization wanted it in. So, you know, and I figured, well, what the heck?
Yeah, so how do you define fair? Like, what is your definition of fair? Carney could argue that, well, the game is possible. It's just, it's not my responsibility to say how possible it is. Did you have a way of measuring how fair a game needed to be?
Well, first of all, how many people do you know out there that have enough practice to win at a lot of these games? with the exception of maybe the basketball game.
Yeah.
Where you shoot the hoops. You know, and we go on the reasonable man theory. You know, what would a reasonable man or person, you know, think about this particular game? Now, I know that I can't do certain games, but other people can. I'm not a basketball player. I can't shoot hoops. You know, but other people can. And as long as it's not an oval-shaped, you know, basket, as long as the ball is not overinflated like it is and is somewhat normal, it can be done.
Yeah, I've always found with the basketball hoop, the difficulty seems to be the fact that you play at home or you play on a court somewhere and you have a ball of a certain hardness and a certain size and a hoop of a certain size and distance and so on. And then when you put someone into a carnival, or, you know, midway, that the ball is a different size, the ring is a different size, and they're kind of buoyed by a false sense of confidence. Does that play a role? The idea that people sort of think they understand. People go, oh, I know how to shoot a gun. I know how to throw a basketball. I know how to throw a ring. and then they try it themselves and it's just everything slightly different on the midway.
In some cases it is because, their ego is going to be deflated, just like those balloons get after a few days on the board, you know, when they try to do certain games. I'll be honest with you, I don't care how good you think you are, you know the old saying, you can't beat a man at his own game.
Yeah.
You know, if he's got the upper hand, he's going to win. And they're out there to make money because they have to pay, these independent contractors have to pay a pretty large percentage of their intake, you know, for the privilege of being on the lot there, and he's got to make a living. And I don't have a problem with them making a living, but I have a problem when they alter the game, and the game itself is, you know, altered to where you can't win. Then it's not a game. It's, to me, and to the law, it's a crime because it's theft by deception.
Do you, did you come across sort of in your career, did you come across any people who had come up with a new take on a particular game or a particular scam that you hadn't seen before?
One of the things, that I saw, you're familiar with the fishbowl.
I am, where
you throw the ping pong ball into the fishbowl.
Mm-hmm.
There was another version of that where they had circling bowls where you had ping pong balls that you had to throw into the bowl. And like the ring, you know, ring of bottle game where you would throw the rings on the Coke bottles, it would hit one of those bowls and bounce out. So I modified one of those particular games when they came to this area. And what I had them do, instead of making the bowls empty, where the balls, the ping pong balls would hit into them and then bounce out, I had them put some water in it to cushion it so that if it did actually get in there, that it would stay in there and not, you know.
What do you think would happen if you filled the, I'm just thinking of how I try and get around it. If I filled my fishbowl all the way to the very top with water and then tried to get people to throw ping pong balls into that, I wonder whether the ping pong balls would just, you know, skip off the top of the, off the top of the fishbowl and just roll straight out again if you filled it all the way to the top.
It's a possibility. And then that's where you're looking at like the quarter pitch to the plates.
Yeah.
Remember how you throw the quarters on the plates? You know, it would skim, and some people learned how to try to cheat the carny, where they would put a little spit on the bottom of the quarter to where it would stick. I knew one guy, he told me, he said, and I didn't see him do this, because if I had, I would have arrested him for trying to cheat. But I told him, I said, what do you mean you put wax on the bottom of that thing so it would stick? I said, don't you think that when they pick it up, they're going to look at the quarter? He says, well, he didn't, and I won my prize.
And walked away. I do like the stories of people managing to beat the games with a creative method. It just feels like there's this, I mean, obviously from a law enforcement point of view, it's still an element of fraud, but I like the idea of the carny maybe getting their comeuppance every once in a while.
Yeah, they, you know, a lot of people, you know, like to do it. Like, for instance, you know, the little puzzle game that they have called Spot the Spot or Cover the Red Spot.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with that game because we don't have that in Australia at all, and so I've only learned about it from books. And
do you use the cloth or do you use the board?
I use the board.
The red.
Yeah, I use a board, and I looked up some old mathematical studies that were done into it, because it was, I think it was around 1986 or so, there was basically a competition to try and figure out what is the it was a puzzle, you know, a mathematical puzzle to be solved. And it was, what is the smallest ratio of disc to spot you can do for the game to still be possible? So it was the idea of, you know, if you measure the two, what is the smallest possible disc you can use? And I think it's something like it needs to be about 61.576% the size of the spot that you're covering to get away with it.
The margin of error on those were about like 1/1000th of an inch, you know, of error, you know, and that is very, very little.
Yeah,
and particularly if you use the magnesium zinc, you know, alloy type disc, because unfortunately, no matter how low they would let you go, even if they let you rest your hand on the board itself, and you drop the disc, the magnesium zinc alloy disc would tend to float a little bit, so that your drop was not actually what you would call an accurate drop; it went straight down. Yeah, I'm in awe of their ingenious, you know.
Yeah.
You know, I really am, because, you know, you've got the laws of physics that work with you on some of these games to cheat the people. You've got principles of science, principles of magic. I'll tell you, Nicholas, it's gotten to a point where, because really no one enforces these games, I found out there's a good reason a lot of them don't. And that's because I mentioned politics. Well, there's a certain political party that has lawmakers in their pockets, which I found out many, many years ago when I tried to get regulations here in Georgia on it. And this political party I went to for help, talked to them about it. They were very nice. You know, they were just like the regular confidence man. You know, they smiled at me, shook my hand all the time, thinking, we're going to get over this guy. And sure enough, what I was told by who's now deceased carnival operator. He owned a carnival company many years ago. But he told me, he says, you'll never get regulations because the carnival industry has the politicians in their pockets.
Yeah.
And I thought he was just BSing me.
No.
But he wasn't. It was true.
Yeah, and we have the same problem here in Australia with the casinos and in particular poker machines or slot machines, in which huge amounts of revenue is made each year via taxes and via, you know, donations to political mm-hmm. parties. We surprisingly, we don't really have a massive problem with the carnival, the sort of things you're talking about with our version of the carnival. We have the sort of agricultural shows, which I guess is your version of a state fair. So around the 1950s, the Show Society and the Showman's Guild basically swept through and cleaned up not only all the crooked games, but they got rid of things like freak shows, animal acts, anything that was in a tent. They said, no, we want permanent structures and kind of, I mean, some people think kind of ripped the heart and soul out of the show, but really just sort of started pushing very heavily on the rides. And so today you do still get the carnival games, but they're very, very commercially run. So they're not run by individuals. They're not run by, you know, some guy who's got a couple of Coke bottles. They're very slick operations and for the most part are very, very fair. Do you think that sort of regulation is a good thing, or do you think it does sort of spoil the atmosphere and the fun of a carnival to have Big Brother?
I think it has pros and cons to it. Wisconsin. Did you know that Wisconsin has a state fair police?
Really? So you can actually join the state fair mm-hmm. police? That's brilliant.
I talked to a friend of mine where I got some of these games. You know, I bought them from him. And, you know, the ones that I didn't pick up along the midway myself. He was with the Wisconsin State Police Fair. You know, fair police or whatever they called it. All he did was go around the state where he had jurisdiction and inspect the games that they had, you know, at the different carnivals and fairs that were set up, you know, in the different venues. You know, he confiscated a lot of stuff over there. And my question is, how well trained are people in this? You know, will they come across something that they don't understand what the method is or the mechanics involved? And God forbid you let a crooked game in. You know, that's where you could come back in your face.
Yeah, I was in London and I was talking to a cop there, and he was very much, I think, just on the beat as almost like a tourist attraction, because he had the Bobby's helmet and uh-huh. he looked like a London police officer. And about 50 meters away from him were a group of Romanians playing three-card Monty, but they were playing him with the black discs, so the three-disc Monty. Essentially the only difference between that and, you know, three black discs rather than three playing cards. And I sort of said, oh, do you know three-card Monty? And he said, oh, yeah, we've shut all that down. And I said, well, you know, that's what they're playing over there. And he kind of looked and saw it and goes, oh, with the discs, really? And so he didn't make the connection that it was exactly the same as three card Monty, but was using disc, because no one had sort of trained him how to spot the different variations of the scam.
I was at one of the conferences we had, and I was in a lounge with a few of the cops, and I was doing a little three card Monty for a few of them. And a fella from another convention came over and he said, I think I can win on this. I said, really? He said, yeah. I said, okay. So I gave him a piece of paper and I put win on one side of the paper, then I put a long line down, and then on the other side, I put lose. I said, now, without using any money, I want you to tell me how much you're going to bet, and if you win, you can put it on, you know, how much you win on the win side. If you lose, you put how much you lose. And in less than 15 minutes, the man lost almost $3,000. Never won anything.
Did he know?
And he thought that he could.
Did he know did he know that he was surrounded by police officers?
He wanted to use real money, and I told him, I said, no, sir. I said, I'm not only a police officer, but I'm a magician as well. And I said, it would be unethical for me and immoral for me and against my principles and my oath for me to do this, to win money off of you, because it would be done by what they call larceny by trick up there.
Yeah.
Theft by deception down here.
It's
I told him, I said, this is the only way we're going to do it.
Games like Three Card Monty are so easy to understand the rules of, and so easy to feel like you can win, and yet so difficult to master and impossible to beat when you're playing against a con artist, that I assume it is the same with carnival games, because every single carnival game I've ever seen is so easy to understand, and yet just so extraordinarily difficult to beat. The Coke bottles, for example, is one, you know, a couple of Coke bottles, knock them over with a softball. That looks so easy and yet is just almost impossible. And is that the secret, do you think, to sort of a really good carnival game, is that it looks so extraordinarily simple but just isn't?
Well, the game operator does it from inside the booth. And again, they use a little sleight of hand, you know, to knock the bottles over with. You know, just like they would use on like 3-pin or 5-pin bowling, you know, they'll use their pinky to knock over the bottle as they throw the, you know, or as they roll the ball down to the bottles. And some of the bottles are offset so that if, you know, if you're right-handed, you know, then what'll happen is they'll offset the opposite bottle so the energy of the ball is absorbed in that bottle, leaving no energy to knock the other one over. And, you know, it would be a good game, but the big softball they use, you know, the stitching they have on it,
yeah,
that kind of alters the path of the ball too, interferes with it, you know, we call it hindering, you know, the roll.
What about something like the bottle up game, where you have the bottle sort of laying on its side, and then the player needs to use a ring on a piece of string to basically hook the neck of the bottle and then
yeah.
lift it upright. Is that one that is possible? I mean, because I've seen people do that, but only with weighted bottles where it's sort of, you know, they've either put something inside the bottle to weight it, or they've found a bottle that isn't quite made, you know, manufactured right, so it's thicker on one side. Is that really the only way to beat it?
You can do that legitimately. But it's called a two-way game, which means it can be played honest or crooked, depending on how they want to do it. The bottle they use, a lot of people don't know that a bottle comes out of the mold naturally weighted. One side of the bottle is heavy, the other side is light. If the heavy side is up and they try to put the ring over the bottle and lift it up, then what's going to happen is the bottle, once it starts to lift up on that particular game, is going to roll to the side with the heavy side making it roll, depending on, you know, which part of the board it's on. And, you know, they're going to lose. But if they were to put the bottle with the heavy side down and the light side up, then yes, it's a winnable game. It can be done. So the only way I allowed it is to take all the bottles, mark the heavy sides, and make sure the heavy sides were the ones that were always on the bottom, as long as the heavy side of the bottle is shown to be on the bottom and not the top by having it marked, and that the platforms they have it on are not too slanted to where it would be, you know, really impossible to do. And I would come by and do some spot checks, and I would roll the bottle to see where the heavy side was, and if it corresponded where the mark was, then they were good bottles. If they didn't, you know, those bottles got broken.
Speaking of slanted platforms, I run an event each year. So we have Science Week in Australia, which is, you know, lots of science events for families. And we had something, it's called Market of the Mind, which is essentially just a little mini fair for science. And I'm always, each year I do something called the House of Games, which is essentially I run crooked carnival games. People try and win and then reveal the secret of why it's possible. So we have cover the spot and so on. And one of the ones, and you know, knocking down, tin cans and so on. And one of the ones that I always do is the swinger, which is, you know, obviously trying to knock over a bowling pin with a ball that's sort of attached to a pendulum. You know, it has to knock it over on the return journey. And I've discovered that the place where we do it is down by the river, and it's on a slight slope, and it's extraordinarily difficult to set up a swinger ball on a slight slope, and you're constantly trying to chuck up corners to make sure that it is perfectly lined, because you know, if something moves just slightly, the game becomes very, very easy to win. And so I'd leave it in the hands of the demonstrators and I'd go off and I'd come back 20 minutes later and every single person is winning at swinger because it keeps, you know, because if it's at a slight angle, it's offset, it's not quite center and they can win. And so I'm like, this crooked game was suddenly the easiest game in town. So I was kind of beaten by gravity in that instance. But it's...
Yeah, well, swinger, you know, uses Newton's third law of motion. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction.
Yeah.
And you know, for what it misses on the first throw on the right side or whatever, it'll miss on the other side coming back.
Yeah, that's
so
right. Yeah.
You know, I've done that, and you know how people cheat on that, don't you?
Yeah, by moving the pin so that the pin is slightly, you know, off
yeah.
center, which is what happens when the thing is on a slant. But I've also seen variations where the so it's on a stand, normally a bit like a sort of a door frame type stand, and
yeah,
they
the
lean
frame.
Yeah, the frame it's sort of hanging from, and they lean on it. Is that right? And it just sort of puts it slightly off center.
Yeah, what they'll do is they'll push the frame so that it gives the advantage to the player to win and think he has an advantage, so that instead of missing it on the return swing, you know, it'll be pushed over a little bit to where it'll actually nick the bowling pin and knock it over. And that's pretty good. But sometimes the game agent, you know, they'll demonstrate from the side, and they will push their hands beyond the pin, whereas the player can't do that. They
yeah.
have a foul line. They have to do it. So that's a game I don't really like too much, and I would never allow it in on any of the events that I was at.
Yeah, I found another way to win, and this, you know, again, the sort of the foul line makes it impossible. Was basically to have the smallest possible sort of throw or drop that you can, and so what would happen mm-hmm. is, you know, it passes the pin on its outward journey. And then loses a tiny, tiny bit of momentum and then would come back and knock it over on the way back. And just so,
yeah.
So just having that tiny, tiny little, you know, so rather than being off center, just using that tiny little action there would be enough to knock it over. But even that is extraordinarily difficult to get because you need to make sure that you miss it on the outward journey and only get it on its return journey. And that just.
I know it, but then the game agent might use alibis to make you lose. You know, and that's where they would make excuses as to why that was not a winnable throw.
Yeah.
You know, so that's another thing that they do. Another ball game that they have is, you know, the three bottles that they put, you know, two on the bottom and one on top. And again, you have to throw a softball at and knock it over, knock down the pins. I would allow that in as long as the bottles were not over 3 pounds each. I found out one of the guys who gave me a set of those that he had where the bases are like 4 inches or so. I mean, you could have an earthquake there and those sons of guns would be the only thing left standing because there's no way they would fall over. You know, Nolan Ryan couldn't do it with his greatest fastball. You couldn't shoot it with a bazooka and knock him over. But he also showed me a trick on winning the game, too, which I thought was quite interesting. You know how people throw by standing up and they're throwing at a downward angle?
Yeah.
You're familiar with that?
Yeah.
He got on his knees and threw a straight throw at it. And the straight throw was able to knock the bottles completely off the table. But look, this is fantastic.
Yeah, that's...
But one thing... I do want people to realize not all games at carnivals and fairs are rigged. I mean, there's some very good skill games there. The group games where you shoot the water into like a clown's head and blow up a balloon until it bursts, or you have horses that you're racing by shooting the water in there. Now, even though they can rig that to make it a winnable game for one person, and everybody else lose by the amount of pressure and the volume of water that they can control, they normally don't because, you know, it depends on how many players you have there. And in fact, I stood up for a carnival agent one time when we had a city official when his family were using a game like that. and they didn't like the prize that they won because they only had like four people playing. So I told the city official, I said, I'm sorry, but he did nothing wrong.
And did that happen very often over your career, that you had to sort of stand up on behalf of the carnies?
That was about the only time I did, you know. Like I said, and mainly because it was a guy of high rank of the city, you know. So I try to treat people fair. I don't care who they are or where they come from, you know, fair is fair. But I wish there had been more times. It would have been nice.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, fair enough. But you're retired from the Carnival Cop business now, is that right?
Yeah, when I retired, well, actually, I kind of retired from it a few years before I retired from the department. I was put back on patrol, so there wasn't much use for me going out there and, you know, inspecting the games. And besides that, just between us and the lamppost, you know, the sponsoring organization, I understand, didn't want me out there because I kind of, you know, knocked out the money that they would have gotten. Because I kept throwing games out.
Oh, wow. So, politics again.
Again, like I said, you know, and that play, you know, and I'm not going to make an unwise career move.
I was going to try and come up with some carnival slang, but then I realized you would know all of the carnival slang that there is.
No.
So I tried to come up with something that would stump you. So I've got some Australian carnival slang for you to see if you can guess, guess what it means. So the word is showy. A showy. It's a noun. So it's what is a showy? Any guesses?
I would think that would be the stock that they produce out there to draw you in.
Oh, that's good. That's a really good guess. It's actually much simpler than that. A showy is the Australian version of a carny. It's that. But I to be honest, I prefer your term. I'm going to start using showy to refer to the tat.
From Showman's League of America.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, that's it. Yeah, brilliant. Well, thank you so much for the chat. I really appreciate it.
And Nicholas, I was honored. I appreciate it. And I hope whoever you play this, they'll enjoy and, you know, they'll learn a lot about it.
As always, you can find out more at conman.com.au. This has been Scammapalooza.